This is Journeys of Empowerment, a space where we slow down enough to notice what shifts. Where founders and leaders speak honestly about the turning points that changed how they see themselves, their work, and the impact they want to have. I'm your host, Michiel Soetjiedrijd. Before we dive into today's conversation, I want to acknowledge our sponsor. Imagine this. You have rolled out the new process. The expectations are clear, and still adoption stalls. Your behavior does not follow. Often, it's not the strategy that is missing. It's understanding what's actually reinforcing behavior in the day-to-day conversations between managers and the teams. Reinforcer.ai analyzes those everyday leadership conversations and show managers concretely what reinforced the right behavior that missed the mark and what to focus on next time. Built on proven behavioral science, it makes behavior change practical and measurable inside the flow of work. If you're curious what your daily feedback is truly reinforcing, you can explore reinforcer.ai. And now, let us turn toward today's guest. What happens when one question interrupts the life you thought you were supposed to live? In this episode, I sat down with Eslyn Olivia Barents, founder of Luminary Leadership, and a woman who chose to let a crisis become a doorway instead of a breakdown. Born during apartheid in South Africa and raised in a family grounded in service and community, she learned early about contribution. But at 25, in the middle of a corporate momentum, a quarter-life crisis stopped her. One question pierced through the noise. Will my life matter? We explored how that question pulled her out of autopilot success and into purpose-driven impact. The courage to choose alignment over expectation. The burnout that demanded reinvention. Relocating to Amsterdam. Reclaiming her name. Reclaiming softness as power. And building Dream Girls Academy before passing the baton to the young women it raised. She asked it plainly. What is the real conversation you need to have with yourself? This keeps returning. Sometimes success is not about adding more, but releasing what no longer fits. If something in your life feels misaligned, perhaps this conversation meets you there. Let's take a deep breath and begin. Eslyn, welcome to Journeys of Empowerment.
Thank you, Michiel. Thank you for this invitation. I am so looking forward to our conversation today.
We always start with looking at the future and then counting backwards to, the path and the life events and the critical moments and inflection points in life and see how that aligns as a red thread through our lives. But before we do that, I would love to invite you to share with us, who are you becoming? Who do you aspire to become?
Such a beautiful question. So I want to say that I am a luminary leader and still becoming one, developing my luminosity. And what I mean by that is unlocking the next evolution of my gifts, of my purpose, of my service and contribution to the world. And that's what I call the luminary leader. That's what I aim to embody and consistently grow into. And as I shared with you, I've just moved to Amsterdam, which represents a new chapter, a new beginning, a new opening, and stepping into a next higher evolution of embodying a luminary leader and inspiring others to step into that version of themselves as well.
And what is the definition of a luminous leader?
So a luminary leader is someone who walks tall in their presence and in carrying their light. And what I mean by their light is bringing their purpose, their gifts in a way that changes the world, that transforms the environment and others for the better. They are people who know that they came here with a purpose to leave this planet better than what they found it.
You mentioned know that. Or figured it out? Is it always that we know why we're here? Or are we in figuring out mode? What do you believe?
So for many people, there's actually this deep knowing that deep down, I know that I'm here for something different, or I know that I'm here for more. But oftentimes it is clouded or it's hidden behind self-doubt or behind conditioning. And so they are the leaders who come in and they come in with that clear purpose in life. And for others, it's an unfolding, a gentle unfolding as we grow through life.
That got me curious, and I believe the listener too. But there we dive into a little bit later on how was the path of unlocking that and, finding that.
Yes.
How was it for you? Let's start with sharing our Northern Star for today, which hopefully enables us and helps us and guides us, but also the listener where this conversation is centered around and heading towards. It's the identity evolution through awakening. So the identity evolution through awakening. What does it mean for you?
It is to actually choose the person that you want to be. And so often when we look at our lives or what we want to accomplish, where we want to go in life, we ask ourselves, what do I need to do next? What do I need to do to get to my next goal? But identity is about who are you choosing to be in your next chapter. So identity evolution, it means growth, it means change, and it means consistently growing into a higher version of yourself. And through this awakening is becoming awake to more in life, to getting to that point in your life where you realize, I feel like there's something more beyond what I've been taught or what I've been sold or what I see around me. That deep sense within you, it starts a journey of awakening to your higher self. And I'm so excited to go deeper into this in our conversation today.
Yeah, I'm curious about the awakening also, because I've recently read a book from Lisa Miller, and it's about spiritual awakening. And she's a psychologist, and she makes the combination about spirituality and awakening. And so, are we all asleep then? What do you believe as humanity?
Yeah, I believe that most people are asleep. And usually it takes a life-altering situation in life to get you to wake up and actually question your entire reality. So I want to share with you the story of my awakening, which happened at the age of about 25. And I call it the time when I had a quarter-life crisis. Because at the age of 25, Michael, I did all the right things. Finished high school, went and studied, got my degree, got a great internship, worked at an amazing company. And I was living a life working Monday to Friday, get up, go to work, same cycle on the weekend, partying all weekend, and then repeat, repeat, repeat. And then one day I literally just woke up and I asked myself, is this all there is to life? And I started asking myself really thought-provoking questions. Who am I really? Where am I going? Why will my life matter? And
this one hit hard.
Why will
your life matter?
Exactly.
Wow. What was your answer? Yeah. Okay, please elaborate, because what was your answer?
Yeah, and it was asking that question, why will my life matter, that literally switched on a light bulb in my mind, because I just realized I was living my life on autopilot. And at the time, I was very fortunate to take a break from, I finished off a work project, and I set out to travel. And I traveled the world, I volunteered, I stayed at hostels, I did different things. And I had come from a family where generosity was one of our core principles in life and in our family. So just to share with you a bit of the context of where I come from South Africa, and I was born into the apartheid regime, and I was about 10 years old when we as a country had our first democratic elections, and that is when Nelson Mandela became the president. So I was born in this old world and then transitioned into a new world where everything was changing. And in South Africa, we have this principle called Ubuntu, which essentially means it takes a village to raise a child. It's a communal principle. So where I come from, generosity is key. We're always giving back. We're always helping the community. Nobody struggles on their own. Everybody gets involved. And my parents, they were also people leaders in the community and big service-led leaders. And as I traveled the world and I came back and I thought, what actually also makes me happy and makes me feel joy on the inside is doing something nice for somebody else. And at the time, my father started a nonprofit organization. He was the first in his family lineage to finish high school, get an education. He then got a scholarship to study in his MBA in London. And when he came back, he got a really great job and he set up a nonprofit organization on the side. And I came to him and I said, okay, Dad, you know, I really feel like I want to live a life of service. What if I took over the nonprofit organization and I just ran this full time instead of going back to corporate?
Mm-hmm.
And the nonprofit organization was called the Dad Fund. So it was all about supporting young people to get funding to study, to educate themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where my first awakening started, because I woke up and I just realized, there's something more that I want to do with my life, and I want my life to be meaningful and I want to bring about change. And so I headed up the Dad Fund, and I was responsible for taking education programs, entrepreneurship education, internship experiences to youth in rural areas in South Africa. And that's where I really saw, you know, Michiel, some people, as I said, they wake up and they have purpose, they know where they're going, they've got access to information. And some people don't know what they don't know until they stumble across some information or a role model or something or someone that shifts the entire world. And that's what we saw. The more we took these programs into the rural spaces, the more these kids realize, oh my goodness, I can actually study after high school. I can actually travel the world. I can do things. I can change my life. And that was when my first awakening came, because for the first time in my life, I woke up in the morning with so much purpose, a sense of direction and fulfillment in a way that I had never felt before. And that was my first awakening in life, was stepping into a life of meaning and purpose.
Beautiful. And you were 25, eh?
So, yeah, I was 25 at the time.
Do you believe, when you say awakening, and you started also at my question, are we mostly asleep? Are most people asleep? Do you believe that by awakening, we're seeing and feeling something which was already inside of us? Or what do you believe?
Yeah, absolutely. I believe that we are divine spiritual beings having a human experience. And so every person on this planet, they have that part of themselves, and maybe they haven't come into contact with it yet, but they know that, you know, there's something special about me, or I haven't gotten there yet. And that's what I found with this awakening, is that when you go through an experience in life that alters your idea of reality. And that experience could be, you know, moving through a difficult divorce, losing someone that you love through grief, discovering that you have an illness. All of those things get you to a point where you realize, actually, the things that I used to care about, do they actually even matter? And it starts to shift your thinking and how you live your life. And in most cases, it gets you to a point where you live with more compassion, with empathy, and seeking other ways of purpose. So I do believe that it's in every single person in this planet. Some are awakened, some are discovering their journey, some are completely asleep until they stumble into a seminar or an experience or something that wakes up this part of him.
And is that the same kind of awakening which is also what you're trying to help via your charity, your foundation? Are you the same sort of awakening, looking for the same sort of awakening? What are you looking for in an earlier stage of life, maybe?
Yeah, so this is where it gets really interesting, Michiel, because I always believe in, like, there's always this next evolution or next layer of that awakening, and also of your purpose and sense of direction in life. Now, when I look back at that first awakening in my life, it was all about exposing youth, rural youth, to education, right? And so step one was, okay, if I get educated, I have some tools and skills to change my life. And that's almost like a base layer. If you think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, all of the basic needs in place. But as we progress in life, we get to a point of, I want to self-actualize. I want to live up to my full potential. And oftentimes that thing goes beyond education. It's then now you're tapping into the spirituality, or you're tapping into other parts of yourself. So the awakening also has different layers. So whilst the first awakening was all about, okay, education, when I had my second massive awakening in life, it put me on my true path, and it got me to a point where I uncovered different parts of myself, different gifts and information that then helped me to map out a career and a life that was more true and authentic to who I am.
How did you feel it was more of your inner truth? How do you feel that? How does it work for you?
Yeah. So before, you know, after I had finished college, I was then running the nonprofit organization, and I also had the opportunity to study overseas. And then I found myself back in corporates, but working for an incredible global tech company, loving my job. And I got to a point again where I had everything that you would deem successful or traditional success. Great corporate career. I was engaged at the time, so that was also like relationship success on paper. And I had the nonprofit organization, which is making an incredible impact in the world. So on the surface or from the outside, I looked like I was living a successful life. But what happened in that process, that my relationship was quite a codependent relationship. It wasn't really true to myself. And I knew on the weekends I was starting to drink so much. And when I asked myself, why am I drinking so much? It's because I'm trying to numb out that little voice within myself that's saying, this is not it. This is not for you. So if you're talking about authenticity, I realize that at that moment I was living my life based on what society says is successful.
Expectations
as well. And my own ideas of what success
You've assumed expectations of what people think and assume you have to do.
Exactly. And so that also got to a certain point until I took that step to say, actually, this is not true for me. Like living in this environment, in this relationship, in this job, it served until a certain point. But again, I had this knowing that there was more that I was meant to do. And that actually started my second awakening when I left my relationship, I left my corporate career, and my whole body actually crashed because I was living a life that was so out of my natural makeup. Mm. What I mean by that, Michael, is that everybody has a unique design in terms of how they are meant to work, how their energy gets managed, what their gifts are, what their strengths are. And the more you actually take steps to align and be authentic with who you are, that is when you can unlock that true freedom, the flow, the fulfillment, and the meaning. And when you're not in that alignment, or you're out of integrity with yourself, it will often show up in your body. And particularly for women, like I know so many women working corporate and their body is fighting against themselves because they're working in a way that goes against their natural cycles, for example.
So the body keeps the score.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So authenticity, or living a life of authenticity, it requires you to come into radical honesty with yourself about, you know?
That's a deep one. That's a deep concept. Radical honesty with yourself. Why is that so difficult for me to understand what you mean? And why is that a difficult concept for us as humanity? Why?
Yeah.
Why do you believe so?
Yeah, so going back to societal standards of success, or the world that has been painted before us. And if we meet, most people feel like, if I meet these metrics, then I'm successful, then I'm meant to be happy. But if you're radically honest with yourself, your definition, your true definition of success could be different than that. So I'll give you a practical example. I become more successful, more abundant, if I actually reduce my working hours. Now, before, when I built in the old model of success, I used to push. I used to work in sales and business development.
Early in, yeah, late, early latest in my out. Yeah, yeah, no, but early, early in the office and late hours, leaving the office, making a lot of hours.
So a lot of hours, but then that burnt me out. Mm. And then on my journey of awakening and empowerment and authenticity, I actually came across some tools that guided me into my natural way of working and my natural energy type. And in that, I actually discovered that I love to rest. I love to rest. I love to prioritize my well-being. And I love to work a set amount of hours. And I remembered when I was radically honest about the fact that I love to rest and I want to put my well-being first and work backwards to create a business and a life that supports that. It was quite radical at the time because, hey, if you want to be successful, you got to work hard.
You put in the hours.
Yeah. But then I completely flipped the script on that and I started working less. And what happened actually is that I started hitting 300% of my sales revenue target. So the less I work, the more successful I became. So that is a very difficult concept for a lot of people to grasp. However, if you become radically honest about yourself and what you want and how you want your life to work, how you want your work to feel, that is a step that takes you closer to your truth.
What was the biggest hurdle to overcome in that process?
Yeah.
To become radical honest? Because radical honesty, you can be radical honest to yourself. That's one. But to do something in order to change, make the change, is step two. What was in the way? What was the most challenging struggle?
Yeah, so it takes a lot of courage in this radical honesty. I'll just give you another practical example. Say if you are in a beautiful relationship that on the outside it looks beautiful, but deep down you have this niggly feeling, this is not it. Again, it's going to take radical honesty with yourself to be like, yeah, this is not for me, and to walk away from it. So it takes courage to choose yourself and to choose your truth. And it took me about 18 months to restructure the way that I work and the way that I live to align with my natural design and what I wanted for my life. And what happened, Michael, is that I used to live in a hub that was in Johannesburg. It's like the New York of Africa. People are on all the time, hustling, grinding. That's the energy of the city. And I chose to move. I moved to a different city, slower paced, more nature. Every morning I start my mornings with a dip in the ocean, breakfast with friends. I start my morning by nourishing my well-being first, and then I go into my workday. So that was a shift. It was first a mental shift that I had to make. And then shifting my own life, and then also shifting the expectations of those around me, like with my family or with my team, is that this is my new way of operating. But it's amazing when you do that, when you choose yourself, you inspire other people to also make decisions and changes that are good and positive for them as well.
It sounds doable. It sounds simple, yet it is not easy. So if somebody is listening and thinks, wow, this really resonates, how to battle the expectations? I think that's the hardest part of everything. Making the shift yourself, feeling, hey, this feels good for my health and well-being, prioritizing me, which I call extreme self-care without being selfish. That's my mantra. Yet, then the inner voice comes with the expectations and opinions of, well, the first circle, your loved ones, family, community, society. How do you battle? What would be your piece of advice to battle that? Because that can be a really strict, really limiting belief.
Yeah. And it's a good question, Michiel, because I've worked with leaders guiding them through this process of, okay, getting clear about what is it that you need and you want in your life, and then having to communicate, making that decision or making that change, and then communicating it with your loved ones. However, what I have found is that in most cases, that when you're coming from a place of, you are communicating in a way that is respectful, you are communicating in a way that honors you. In most cases, when you do that, somehow it actually gets the other person to be like, I actually respect you for doing that. And I actually make changes in my own life in order to also make that shift. So sometimes you're right, it's just the limiting belief. But once you actually get over the limiting belief and you state your truth, in more cases than not, the other person responds quite well to it. That's what I've seen. And I've guided over 100 leaders through a process of changing their lives. So
beautiful. Now, the reason why I'm emphasizing this point is because my friends also know my calendar, and they're always a little bit envious about 5 to 7 reading, 7 to 8, and then meditation, then a walk minimum of an hour, and then between 9 and 12, for 90% no client work, but inspiration, creation, or learning. So it might be the podcast, that's for me creation. Inspiration and learning are very tied to each other, but not specific client work. And so and all my friends are like, yeah, but I want that too. And I say, okay, start organizing it that way. Yeah, but I have an agenda, or I'm working in corporate and it's not possible. And do you believe it's everywhere possible to make that change? Or do we have to also change our environment? Do you believe, for instance, that the radical change to put yourself at first, and if your default mode is I need more me time, do you believe we're also able to help leaders who are working in corporate environments to create that?
Absolutely. So it's a process. As you know, Michael, change, it's a process. Now, there are some of us who said, okay, I'm going to completely change my environment. But for some people, they may have other big family obligations. And actually, one of my clients that I worked with, he was running his family-owned legal firm for years. And working through this process of change, it actually took a couple of months where he realized, actually, I've served my purpose in my family business. And he actually decided to have a talk with his family, cash in his shares, sold his part of the business, moved to a different city, started his own business. And now he's living a completely different life. So it does take time. And of course, not everyone can change jobs or change careers just like that. But it starts with incremental shifts. I mean, you know the book Atomic Habits.
Yes.
Making one small decision in the right direction for you can change everything. If you can't dedicate a whole hour or a power hour to meditation and breath work and setting your day, start with 30 minutes. If you can't do 30 minutes, start with 15 minutes. And just start making those slowly change over time, that it will build up. And the more you realize, I've watched so many people walk through this process, and sometimes at first your friends or your family, they'll get triggered by you living your life on your own terms, right? Because it's like, why are you doing it like this? Or all these things come up for them, but it's because they actually also want that.
Or indirect criticism, because you change your life and they're like, okay, but is our life then not good enough? What is it?
Yeah. And so that change happens very slowly. And as you take the one step, then you realize, okay, now I can change my eating habits, maybe. Or now I can add something else to my exercise schedule. So it's minor incremental shifts that you can make. What helps is to be a part of a community of people who are on the same path. What also helps, of course, is having a mentor or coach who can walk the journey with you, so you're not alone doing all of the changes. I know that in so many incremental parts of my journey, I hired a coach or I got a mentor or I was a part of a mastermind, and that was critical in supporting me to bridge, you know, from the old world into the new world.
What is in that bridging period? What is one thing where you're most proud of in transitioning from, well, the corporate space to, let's say, the space where you're now? And what is the one thing where you are most proud of?
Yeah, so I would say when I look back on my life now, more often than not, there have been periods of absolute not knowing. Uncertainty, navigating uncertainty, and knowing, having this deep knowing that I've grown past this, past my old life, or sometimes even your old circle, but I can't fully see what's ahead of me, or I can't fully see what's in the next chapter. And I've actually had a few moments like that in my life. And as I matured in life, I realized that those moments, when you're sitting in the unknown, they are so potent. They are so fertile. Because it's in those moments that your internal wiring, from a physiological perspective, biology, psychological, spiritual perspective, you are being rewired, redirected, and repurposed for something greater in your life. So instead of fighting with this, like, I don't know what's happening, being in this uncertainty, when you're someone who's naturally maybe ambitious, you always have all the answers, you know where you're going, and all of a sudden you find yourself in a space where you know nothing, to actually allow yourself to be with that moment. And what I mean is to work with the energy of the unknown. So use that time as downtime. Use that time to rest, to recalibrate. Go on your forest walks, go travel. Just do whatever you need to enjoy that moment of not knowing. So I use it to rest. I use it also to recalibrate and to allow my life to come together. And so what I'm most proud of is my ability to navigate the unknown. And I want to just share a little story as well here with the audience.
Please do so.
Around even my move coming to Amsterdam. And in 2024, I was approaching my 40th birthday. And usually, I'm someone who loves celebrating birthdays. I always have parties and celebration. But for some reason, the whole of 2024, I just didn't feel like a party. And I thought my 40th would be my biggest party ever. And
life
just
begins at 40, right?
Yeah, but I was not feeling it. And the closer and closer I got to my birthday, I asked myself, now talking about that radical honesty again, Islin, what do you really want for your 40th? I thought about it and I said, actually, I want a fresh beginning. I want a new environment. I miss the innovative, ambitious side of me, because at the time I was living in Cape Town, which is, it's lovely, beautiful city, but for me it was quite slow paced, and I spent 5 years there. And I was ready for my next. I was ready to be activated in a new way. And within 2 weeks, actually, I felt an intuitive nudge, like, just go to Amsterdam. There's something for you in Amsterdam. And I'm like, okay. However, at this age in my life, I know the voice of my intuition, so I listened to it. And actually, I packed up my life, I sold everything, and I had no plan, Michael, no plan whatsoever. And I just decided. I came to Amsterdam for 3 months. And when I came to Amsterdam, I was like, okay, I'm here now. What next? But it was after meditation one morning that I received the name of my business now, Luminary Leadership. And I started writing about this. And I knew, I had this deep knowing that the next evolution of my purpose, it's going to come from being in a different location. And Amsterdam feels right. It's a progressive, it's international. This is the frequency that you're bringing forward in your work next. And so I received the name of Luminary Leadership, and I actually started it. Yeah, I started my blog and I started writing and interviewing luminary leaders. And then 2 weeks later, I met my partner as well, which has been an amazing relationship, so different from anything I've experienced before. And then it became clear to me, like, okay, this is why I actually came here. I had this intuitive nudge to just come here for this fresh beginning, and it was all taking shape. Yeah. And then what happened the year between then and now is that life started to life. And I got put through all types of interesting challenges that really got me to build my hope, my faith, my resilience, you know, keep on overcoming challenges. And eventually I found myself now starting a new chapter in my life now. And so what I'm most proud of is navigating the spaces in between, that space in between
the liminal space.
The liminal space. And to keep going, even when you don't have all the answers, even when you can't see anything fully. But now I believe that I feel like I've crossed that threshold. And
what
the new beginning.
What do you mean by that?
I crossed the threshold of not knowing, and I'm fully grounded into my new chapter now.
And do you believe that you know? Do you believe that you know that you now know what you didn't know?
Now I believe that I'm ready for all that's coming, and there's no uncertainty like there was before.
Mm. Now the reason why I'm asking is I'm having a lot of conversations. I love that, and it's part of who I am. And one thing I come to believe is that knowing is an illusion, as is perfection, as is a lot of other things. But knowing is an illusion, because what determines if we know something and what we thought we know is now obsolete or whatever, or is it right or is it wrong? Or so try. And also, I have a difficulty with the word expert, and I have a difficulty with the word knowing, because the moment it leaves our mouth, it sort of, not always, sort of maybe a combination of entitlement, I know everything, and a combination, I struggle with entitlement either, also, and not myself, but I'm like, why do people act entitled? Entitled to what? But also about the knowing, complacency. Mm. The moment we think we know something, we tend to stop learning, observing, listening, trying to understand what other people's perspective is, because we think we know.
Yeah.
Does it resonate, or?
So, Michiel, I must say that aspect and what you shared is something that I really leaned into with my move here in Amsterdam. Yeah, I've always been a very open-minded person and understanding of different perspectives, and you know, I deal with people from different religions, different thought philosophies, and so forth, and then there was a deepening and an opening of this that you're talking about, understanding and accepting of different viewpoints as mm-hmm. well. That happened for me here in Amsterdam. And I think, again, it's because of the culture here, and it's because of the internationality here as well, that it got me to expand in that way as well. And that's what I love also about moving to different spaces or traveling the world, right? Because the more you get exposed to different locations, different circles, and so forth, the more it expands your thinking and worldview.
I believe so too. Now to the first part of our Northern Star, identity evolution. What do we mean by that? So we talked about true awakening and the concept of awakening. But what is your definition of identity evolution?
Right.
And so what is, and maybe even because we're as humanity, we also, again, about knowing, we tend to talk a lot about concepts as identity or belonging or whatever. But if you ask, okay, but what does identity mean for you? Then if you ask 10 people, for sure you get 10 different kind of perspective. So what for you does it mean, identity and identity evolution?
Yeah, great question. So identity is the who am I? Who am I? Many people define themselves by their roles in life or by their job titles. But identity is, I believe it takes you to a deeper place. Who am I and who am I choosing to be? So when we talk about identity evolution, right, every time you are planning to step into the next chapter of your life or the next level of your career, most people will ask themselves, okay, what do I need to do to get to my next goal? Identity evolution asks, who do I need to become next? Mm. Who am I stepping into next? And so when I tune into this theme of identity evolution, I also like to think of how I plan my years, right? So when I come into a new year, I'm not thinking about what goals do I want to achieve and so forth, but how do I want to carry myself? What presence do I want to bring into the room? How do I want to shape myself? Now, often that means shifting or changing some of your habits. Sometimes that also means releasing parts of your old identity as well. So maybe things that you used to tolerate in your life or relationships that used to work for you up until a certain point. So it's when you choose the new identity that you're stepping into, you're also choosing what aspects of my past identity am I leaving behind.
Boom.
Right. So let's say, let's make it practical now. Let's say you are choosing to step into a new goal and you're choosing to go for a new, let's say, an income goal, a revenue goal in your business. What type of leader are you choosing to be next? You know, I am the type of leader who puts people first, as an example. I am the type of leader who is anchored in integrity. I am the type of leader who goes to gym three or four times a week. So it's choosing how to craft your inner being and how you want to show up in the world. So the identity evolution is all about change and it's all about stepping into deeper, higher parts of yourself. So as we journey through life and as we grow through life, we discover new parts of ourselves, or rather uncover it. Some people suppress certain parts of themselves, and it's only through life that they become more true, more authentic. And so when you do that, you can evolve your identity as well. So a big part for me when I move into a new chapter is also looking at, okay, what am I no longer doing? What do I no longer tolerate? What are the habits that I'm going to stop today? What are the habits that I'm going to integrate into my life now? What are my new rituals? And I actually choose a quarter on quarter. I look at, okay, what are my rituals for this quarter? What are the type of people? Who are the type of people that I want to connect with now? So it's thinking about who you are from the inside out and then shaping your life, your career, your business, your relationships, all from the inside out.
Wow. This resonates deeply. Thank you for elaborating on that. And I'm a firm believer of the Stoics. And I read a lot of books of Ryan Holiday. I'm now in the middle of my challenge, 8 books in 8 weeks from in a row from him, from Ryan Holiday. I've read them all, well, in different times, but now in a row. And Ego is the Enemy gave me sort of inspiration for 3 questions. So, and I'm writing them down every morning and I'm starting to answer them also. So the first question is, who do I want to become? The second question is, which path will I take? And the third question is, how do I stay humble along the way? And those three, it's inspired, so it's not literally. I'm always thinking in questions. So I read something which resonates, a quote, and I'm like, can I reverse engineer the question before that? And then so I've reverse engineered, I read a quote, as Ryan Holiday is very strong with quotes, and I thought those 3 questions. And it's interesting, I started, well, I have it downstairs in my moleskin, and I'm Stoic, so I do it then every day. And all of a sudden I notice, hey, there's an answer, coming an answer. So, okay, started writing the next day the answer. So who am I becoming? Mm. Or who do I want to become? A Stoic go-giver. All right, and then 10 days later, who do I want to become? A Stoic go-giver. The terminology go-giver will be clear after our episode, so drum roll, and but what it means. So it's not for me to elaborate right now. It's just a little surprise for you. But and then 10 days later, it's who do I want to become? And then it evolved into a Stoic go-giver who is investing in people's potential. How do I stay humble along the way is now by being present, listen, observe, execute, evaluate, and improve continuously. And by that, I'm staying humble. So I really believe also in neuroplasticity and in programming and rewiring our brain. Is that also part of what you're believing in, or how is that for you?
100%. And I love what you shared about the questions. I have a similar ritual. So I've got 5 questions that I work with every morning.
Uh-oh.
And it's And every morning I journal through these questions. One, who am I? Two, what am I? Three, where do I come from? Four, where am I going? And five, what is my purpose? And so similar to you, every morning I write it out, and I find that over time, you're so right, that it reprograms your mind. It programs you for what you want in life and where you're going. And just asking myself those five questions every day ensures that I'm staying, you know, on my plan, and I've got direction in life, and I'm choosing who I want to be instead of just defaulting to
life events, life in itself.
And just getting, you know, thrown with everything that happens in life, is that I'm setting life from myself. So I love that you share that.
Mm. Let's go to the Dreams Girls Academy, because I truly admire that. But please share with us what it is, and what the aim is, and what it brings you, what it brings the world.
Yeah. So back in 2011, shortly after I had my quarter life crisis, and I was running the Dad Fund, our family nonprofit organization. So at the time, the 2030 SDG goals came out, Sustainable Development Goals. And more research at that particular time was coming out that linked girls' education and empowerment to a country's prosperity. So there were some goals on the importance of educating and empowering young girls. And with that, that initially was where the seed of Dream Girls was planted. I had two friends of mine in the States, and they attended college, and they used to take a group of girls from their community to university to show them how to apply for a scholarship and all of that, and actually give them some options in life. And when they came to South Africa, and we then got into a conversation, and we came to starting a Dream Girls Academy in South Africa. And so I was going to hit this up under the Dad Fund, because I was already working in youth development and education. And for about 6 months, I was thinking, how do I launch this? You know, I could go to all the universities in South Africa and speak to the universities and launch a Dream Girls Academy at the universities. And I was looking at different models of how to bring this about. And then I thought to myself, actually, let me call together a group of women. And I invited about 12 women over to my home. Now, all of these women were women that I met at different points in my life and in my career. So whether I studied with them, high school, college, my first job and so forth, we weren't necessarily friends. But I called them together because I knew that we had similar values. We cared about giving back. And every woman sitting in that circle, they were the first female in their family generation to receive an education and also to receive a helping hand in life. So whether that was a scholarship or a role model, and knowing or seeing how that then supported us to progress very quickly in our careers, and everyone was doing really well for themselves. So we sat around a table, 12 women, and I shared with them the vision or the intention of Dream Girls to go into schools, to work with high potential girls from disadvantaged communities, and to give them access to information and open up a pathway for them to study after school. And together, as women, we started workshopping everything, and we designed a program, a year-long mentorship program, and we decided to pilot it in 2012. And at the time, I went into a school in Hillbrow, and Hillbrow, it's one of the most dangerous, let's say, neighborhoods in Johannesburg. It's a drug-infested place. There's a lot going on there. But we went into the school. We wanted to start there because they had young girls from different parts of Africa that was studying in that school. And we then started the program there at the school in Hillbrow, and we put them through a one-year education and empowerment program. Now, the goal of this program was to ensure that they could go into university afterwards.
Mm.
And many of these girls, they didn't even consider university because they didn't even know that this is an option for me. Like, I don't have the money. I haven't seen anybody in my family lineage do this. So our goal was really to expose them to these opportunities and to get them onto a path to do that. But throughout the program, we focused on education, we did leadership skills, empowerment, well-being, dignity, entrepreneurship skills as well. So it was quite a robust program. And it was quite a difficult program to get in. You know, many of them said it's like applying to the MBA to just get into the program. But we wanted to make sure that we found the girls who really would value an opportunity like this. And anyway, so we ran it for 1 year. It was incredibly successful. The girls got into university. I think our first year we had like a 88% success rate of we placed them all in universities. And then we decided to actually roll it out. And at the time, I was this big, bold visionary. I was like, I want a Dream Girls Academy in every province in South Africa. But in year two, we then expanded into two different cities. Went to Cape Town, went to Durban. We started up there. We doubled up our numbers. But our second year was incredibly difficult because, we scaled very quickly, very fast. And so that was a year of learning and getting the model right. And after year two, we got the model right. And then we expanded into another two cities. And yeah, and so we had a Dream Girls branch in five provinces across South Africa, putting these girls through the program. And eventually we grew into providing digital skills to unemployed young women. And then placing them into big global tech companies like Microsoft, Google, Cisco. Today, some of those young women who came from very humble beginnings are now taking over the world in New York, London, Paris, and even in South Africa. So, it definitely was such an honor to build and grow at the Dream Girls Academy. And today I sit on the advisory board because it's now being run by some of the young girls who actually came through the program back then.
Yeah. Wow, full circle.
Yeah, we passed the baton and they are now running the program for the next generation.
Nice. So it's not dependent anymore about the founding fathers or mothers. And it's now about the next generation who's taking over. That's sustainability in and on itself, right?
Yeah, we always wanted to be run by young women for young women. So,
Eslyn, let me ask a very, I'm a typical Dutch guy on the one hand, blunt question. Why do you care?
Why do I care? I care because for me to have meaning in life or to feel alive in life, I feel like, and I think this is different for everyone, Michiel, but for me, humanity, connection, making a change, it helps me to feel alive in life. If I can change someone's life for the better, then why not? You only have so our time on this planet is so short, so might as well make it meaningful. So I care because also I saw what education did for our family. As I shared earlier, my father was the first one in his family, and he comes from a big family, to get this education. And as a result of that, it completely changed the trajectory of our life. You know, we were able to travel the world and have good opportunities, and that it elevated our lives. It put us in position where we are able to facilitate that change for others. And so that's why I care, because, you know, with the right opportunities, you can live a dignified and impactful life.
Sounds like empowerment in action, right? Beautiful. And also, if we go a little bit more back, and it's Journeys of Empowerment is, of course, about you and your trajectory. In our brief conversation, we had also briefly about reclaiming your original birth name. And which part of your name, because it's Eslyn Olivia. So which part is reclaimed and why?
Yeah. So this story also integrates identity evolution. So I was born as Eslyn, E-S-L-Y-N. And my name is, it's made up from my mother's name, Esti, and my father's name, Lyndon. So Eslyn. And as a child, I was very, very sweet, very quiet, very sensitive, very intuitive, very gentle soul.
Was.
I was. Well, now I've reclaimed that part of myself. Yeah, so that's who I was. And I, you know, we lived in this beautiful community and had great friends, and everything was just all peaceful, harmonious, and so forth. Then at the age of 13, we moved cities, and that's when we moved to Johannesburg, which, as I said, it's known as the city of gold. It's hustle, grind, it's diverse, and it was a completely different environment for me, but it was like the type of environment that you like survive or die. Like, you've got to have a tough skin. And in high school, I then landed getting caught up with like the cool and the wrong crowd. So I was like that typical sweet girl who came into high school, then got caught up with the rebellious crowd. And then I thought to myself, actually, I feel like my name needs more spice. It needs more zing in it. And I decided to change my name from Eslyn to Eslyn with a Z. Because somehow I found that name had more of like this hardcore, this rebellious nature. And for many years in my life, that the energy of the rebel followed me. I spent many years being a rebel without a cause, just running with the wrong crowd, having just so much fun in my life, but also hustling through life. Mm. And you know, there were parts of my life that just always felt hard, and relationships and friendships and feeling like I was constantly in the survival mode. And then, again, it was shortly after my 40th birthday, and I just felt like, you know what, I'm ready for a peaceful life. I'm ready for a harmonious life. I'm stepping into a new era. Now, talking about that identity evolution mm-hmm. that we spoke about earlier, is that I'm ready to just drop the struggle and the rebellious nature and step into my full sovereignty, authority, and living my life the way I want to live it. And again, after one of my meditations, it came to me, like, it's time to change your name back to S. It's S is softer, but it also, your softness is your power. My emotional depth is my power, and that was a part of myself that I suppressed. Oh, I put away because I didn't think it was valuable. I thought you had to be cutthroat, you had to be masculine or strong in order to make it in life. However, what I reclaim through claiming my name and changing back to S is my softness, my femininity, my gracefulness, and also realizing that that is valuable and it actually is my power, because the more vulnerable and soft I am, the more the most aligned doors and opportunities open up for me. So there was an identity evolution that happened in that as well, because I realized looking back on my life that when I changed my name to a Z, and you know, I believe every number, every letter, everything in this planet has an energy to it, is that I brought in this energy of chaos, of struggle, of rebelliousness. And actually, when I shifted back to Eslyn with an S, I brought in more peace and more ease and more harmony and more flow into my life. And so it was a big part of my identity evolution and reclaiming that part of myself.
How was that for your parents? Because your name is tightly linked to your parents.
Yeah.
In terms of you got your name by your parents, but also the name is tightly to your father and your mother, and then you changed it. How was it for them?
Well, when I changed it, they were just like, okay. But then eventually they started spelling my name with a Z as well. Like, everybody knew me as Iz. Mm. And they would spell my name E-Z-L-Y-N. And for 26 years, I actually lived as Eslyn with a Z. And then when I announced and I put it in my family WhatsApp group, hey guys, I'm changing back to Eslyn. And I started sending out messages to all of my loved ones. And I had to change my entire digital footprint, by the way, as well.
Can imagine.
And and then it felt like a homecoming. It felt like a homecoming. It felt like, I do believe that your name holds power and it holds your unique essence. So it felt like a homecoming, and they were very happy for me to change it back to my original name.
It's always only possible to look in hindsight and connect the dots. Yeah. If we're doing that, if we're trying to do that, looking back at the period when it was Iz, what did you learn most about yourself?
What I learned most about myself is that I actually thrive in periods of change. And as I shared earlier, the unknown as well. And I say that because many people don't do well with change. Many people like comfort. But for me, I'm very comfortable with change. And that's why this is exactly what I support companies and leaders with now, is to navigate change, growth, transition, and the unknown.
Mm. Trying to get back to the here and now. How does it all work together in practical sense? How are you helping your clients? Who are your favorite client or your ideal customers? And what shift do you want them to see to work towards?
Yeah. So my company is called Luminary Leaders, Luminary Leadership. And essentially, I say I take leaders on a journey of shifting from being a visionary to a luminary. Mm-hmm. Now, what that practically looks like is that usually when you are that person who is ambitious and has big dreams and is strategic, that will only get you to a certain point in your career and in your life. There comes a time when you're like, okay, what got me here is not going to take me there.
You know the book, eh? And what got me here won't get you there.
Exactly. So I work with visionary leaders and companies when they are at the edge, the threshold of their next chapter. I support them to plan energetically and strategically for that next chapter. And what that looks like is oftentimes leaders come to me when they're feeling stuck. They're feeling stagnant, misaligned, or uninspired. They're procrastinating. They've lost their motivation. The things that used to create their success is just not working anymore. And so that's when they come to me and I take them through a process. I've got specific tools and journeys and frameworks that I work with to take them deeper into themselves, to uncover their gifts, and to align their lives with actually what lights them up. Because oftentimes when people are experiencing even things like burnout, it's not only because they are overworking, it's also because they're doing too little of what lights them up.
Misalignment.
Yeah, it's misalignment. So it's about getting them to know themselves on a deeper level and then starting to craft their life, their business, their career from that space of radical honesty.
It's a tough one to be radical honest to yourself, right? Mm. I often ask the question, what is the real conversation you need to have with yourself? And that really helps people pause and reflect, because are we having the real, right, radical, honest conversation with ourselves? What would be a question, an opening question for someone who you feel that is on that sort of crossroad? You feel if to also figure out the readiness, if somebody is ready for to have that conversation. I truly believe also there's a timing, right? In so sometimes it's too early. People are still in denial. What do you believe will be an opening question?
So one of my core questions that I ask a leader coming into my space is, where are you not free? And I ask, where are you not free? Is because usually when you are at that threshold, it's because either there's something that's holding you back, or there's a habit, or you're doing something that is not allowing you to feel free and expansive in your being. So when you ask the question, where are you not free, you can start looking at, I'm feeling a bit constrained in this area of my business, or I'm actually feeling a bit agitated in this relationship, or I'm very frustrated by how this is going. So that's one of my opening questions, because I know that one of my key gifts of what I bring to others is liberation, liberating yourself. And freedom and liberation is not only about, you know, your external life and how you live your life. It's mental freedom, emotional freedom. Now, where are you letting your emotions get caught up in a situation of the past, or a dynamic still with your mother or your father, or some family thing?
Or expectations, obligations, opinions of others.
Yeah, and the more you start to become aware of the areas where you're not free, that shows you the pathway of where you can transform your life.
Wow. Thank you. I don't know if you heard of the name Edith Eger. She's an Auschwitz survivor. She is a psychologist. She wrote 2 books, The Gift and the Choice. Mm-hmm. And she's asking, she's a psychologist. And, well, I bet not a cheap ticket to go there. So, and people are coming there, and sometimes really with closed, you see they're closing down hands like this. And then she asked, the first question she asks is, why now? Mm. And it does also something to us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just why now? See how people open up. Eslyn, what are we going to see next from you?
Oh, that question makes me feel very happy because I feel very excited about this next chapter.
Ah.
Yeah, so as I land and I ground down here into my new home in Amsterdam, I am bringing forward luminary leadership in a deeper way. And I believe that luminary leadership is also about igniting that fire, that light, that passion in people. So, you know, for those leaders who are feeling, you know, stuck, stagnant, misaligned, uninspired, luminary leadership through different interventions and bespoke experiences, I'm bringing that forward into the city. I'm so excited about hosting new expansion experiences, to host my new in-person sessions over here in Amsterdam. And I'm looking forward to actually first ground and integrate into the community, of course. Support initiatives of leaders who are like-hearted as well. I'm very much about community and collaboration, doing things together. So yeah, what you can see from me is bringing this transmission of luminary leadership up, igniting more people, supporting more people to overcome or heal from burnout so that they can live and lead with clarity and vitality. And I'm excited for this new chapter.
We're looking forward to follow you, and of course we will put your where people can find you in the show notes. What would be the change in the world you would love to see if you have had a magic wand and one strike to go? Only one.
Yeah, change in the world. I would love to see more happy people, happiness in the world. There's a lot of people who are going through depression and loneliness in the world. And happiness and community, connection, I would say.
Eslyn, thank you very much for being here, for being a guest on Journeys of Empowerment. Love to follow you, and if I can support with Journeys of Empowerment in some sort of way, then just remember I'm just one phone call away.
Thank you so much, Michiel. Thank you for this platform to share my story, and it was such an honor to have this conversation. I really enjoyed this conversation with you, so thank you so much.
Thank you for listening and for being present with this conversation. If something in this episode stayed with you, consider sharing it with someone who might need it right now. And if you choose to subscribe or leave a short review, you help these conversations reach others who are still reaching for clarity, direction, and alignment. If you're a founder sensing that your work no longer reflects who you are becoming, there's a room to pause, a grounded space to look at what energizes you, what drains you, and what may be ready to evolve. You can explore that at journeysofempowerment.com and see if it feels aligned. That's how the circle widens, quietly, one listener at a time. Keep going, keep becoming you.